Today's reading is from Exodus 16, 1 through 3, and 17, 1 through 4. And they journeyed onward from Elim, and all the community of Israelites came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month of their going out from Egypt. And all the community of Israelites murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the Israelites said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out to this wilderness to bring death by famine on all this assembly." And the community of Israelites journeyed onward from the wilderness of Sin on their journeyings by the Lord's direction, and they encamped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. And the people disputed with Moses, and they said, "Give us water, that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you dispute with me, and why do you test the Lord?" And the people thirsted for water there, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Why is it you brought us up from Egypt to bring death on me and my children and my livestock by thirst?"
So this morning, Pastor Hannah got a text from one of our congregants saying, "Hey, I haven't heard anything about Rally Day." This is one of our congregants with kids. And that's because today is supposed to be Rally Day. This is the day that's supposed to be Rally Day in the life of our church, which isn't a religious holiday, of course, but it's a church tradition. It's like our back-to-school morning. It's the day that we relaunch. I can't quite see you guys with these flowers. There you are. It's the day when we relaunch Learning Center and Godly Play and Youth Group. And so normally, what do you remember happening on Rally Day? Like before worship. A lot. Kids everywhere. Children bonanza. Treats and more treats. During worship, we would have had this whole chancel space filled to overflowing with toddlers through fifth graders. And they would not have been holding still, and they would have been telling us exactly what they thought about things. We would have been studying Genesis and its explosion of life and all the energy of birth, and we would have felt that coming back after a summer of, you know, some Sundays off and travel and doing other things, and we would have felt alive and rebirthed into our community. And I miss that so badly. I miss that in my bones and my chest. I so badly wish that this was Rally Day 2 years ago. I so wish. What about you? What have you missed the most about our corporate life together since everything changed 18 months ago? Anything? Sonny says, "Hearing everyone sing. Lori, I know you miss being in the choir." Yeah. What'd you say, Brad? Yeah. So if you didn't know that, our youth group, they gathered around the sacred blessing of coffee at Cafe Diem before worship. That was what they got to do before worship, you know, on the church's dime. And Brad was one of the grown-ups who got to go with and just watch and wonder with them. Laura Deal misses singing hymns. Neil misses Learning Center. Could you have predicted how much you would miss those 18 months ago? Could you have predicted what you would miss the most? Nick is saying no. I remember, Nick, you were glad that you were on the property team because it meant you at least got to come in here during the closed down time. So we had a team of people who came through here every day to check for water leaks and other issues, and Nick got to be one of those. I mean, I knew I would miss the kids. And I was so glad that Pastor Hannah and I got to see the ones we did on the Zooms. But boy, they sure look different in person than they do on screen. They're much taller. So one of the conversations that Pastor Hannah and I have as the clergy of the church, and this might be one of those things you wish you didn't know about us, is that we talk about, over the course of our work together, who seems likely in our church community to die and what it is that they might need from us during that process and what their families might need afterward. We try to do some preparation in advance, which might sound morbid and strange, and you might be wondering, oh, am I on their watch list? But that's part of why you called us apart in ordination, is so that you know that there's somebody in your life who is doing that emotional and spiritual work in advance. And it's one of our greatest honors to come alongside you and your loved ones during those times of raw mortality. It's such a blessing to us. So, you know, when the pandemic hit, now part of my training is in the history of medicine, and I was picturing the, you know, 19-teen flus. And we reflected together on who in our congregation might be most vulnerable to the coronavirus, based on our knowledge of your health and our knowledge of your risk levels, your levels of exposure. Even though knowing that this is a congregation that would be quick to mask, would be quick to take vaccines, would be quick to be as cautious as possible, I still imagined a lot of death. I imagined a significant loss of life in our congregation this last year. But thankfully, we haven't gone through that. I've been waiting for it, but we haven't gone through it, which isn't to say we haven't had loss. We've had quite a few deaths in our congregation. Let me make sure I get everybody. Linda, Rich, Dean, Ginny, Edna, Kermit, Melinda, and now John, who we're going to bury tomorrow up in Hubbard. None of them from COVID. I know some of you have lost loved ones from COVID, but no one in our church from COVID. But there's something else that COVID killed in our corporate life, if not our people. We've had this death of habits, this death of traditions, the death of the ability to see full faces and to shake hands, the death of the muscle memory of how to do worship. What had died to us too is communion around this table and the ability to practice baptism as a community. You know, we zoom in for baptisms now, but it's sure different when we get to be here all together with the little splashy ones. We have, I think, hungered for the feast and thirsted for the waters, just like the freed Hebrew people. But unlike them, we don't murmur. That's the translation I use. Did you have something different in your translation, Brett? So some of it say murmur, some of it say complained against. I like murmur. We don't murmur against Moses and his brother Aaron and God. But I know in this last 18 months, I've had some very unchristian thoughts. Some very unchristian thoughts about other people in our world, those neighbors who I'm supposed to love no matter what. Why didn't they, and that they is sometimes very specific politicians, or they are just the sea of humans who make choices that are different than mine, why didn't they do differently? Why haven't they done differently? Why don't they do differently now so that we can go back? So we can have a chancel full of toddlers through fifth graders again, which is a fruitless question. Or at least maybe a fruitless conclusion, an illogical conclusion, because why would I ever presume there's something like going back? Why would I ever presume there is a back to go to? That's not what our stories describe, the stories that I stake my life on. That's not what our stories describe. So you remember last week we studied Moses' birth, which was made very dangerous by Pharaoh's decree that all male children and infants needed to be killed. It took a series of women and a child, each of them, to pull on extraordinary strength to get him through childbirth, his first 3 months, into the arms of a protector and then back to his mom through the time of his weaning. Every one of those steps could have been the end of Moses, but it wasn't. So we can skip forward to today's chapter, further along in Exodus, and we have Moses all grown up. Moses in his adulthood was raised in the house of Pharaoh, but then he killed an Egyptian who was brutalizing a Hebrew slave, and he fled. Moses fled from Egypt. He got married. He married a Midianite, so a different ethnic group outside of Egypt. He had kids, and then one day he was struck a prophet. He was struck a prophet by a bush that burned but was not consumed. So Moses, before the passage we heard today, Moses has gone back to Egypt to negotiate with his adoptive grandfather, Pharaoh. Negotiations that include terrible suffering and bloodshed, but a negotiation that I think in some ways is most remarkable because Moses got the Hebrew people to trust him, a Hebrew person who was raised as an Egyptian, and so didn't suffer any of the trials that he had, that they had. And yet those were trials, that was suffering that he was able, with the help of God and their own willingness, to get free from. And it's a suffering that they can return to if they choose in all of their murmuring. It's curious how often that phrase, that sense of complaint against Moses and actually Aaron both comes up throughout the Exodus story, because it's not like they have total control over the lives of the freed people. Moses has not become a new owner. Moses is not a new captive or captor of them as captives. They could go back. Moses has no power to keep those freed people from returning to their flesh pots and their secure sources of water. They could go back. But there is no going back. There's no going back after so much death. And we know that for ourselves. So sometimes in our nation, particularly amongst white people, we'll hear this cry, oh, if we could just go back to the 1950s. Oh, if we could just go back to the 1960s, dot, dot, dot. But in addition to wishful thinking, that is a lethal thought. I can't think of a single black American who would want to go back to the first era of Jim Crow. I can't think of a woman who would want to go back to a time when marital rape was legal and assumed to be happening. And I certainly know that queer people like me have no desire to go back to a time where we have to stifle our desire. And it's not like these times are super great either. There's still assault and lynchings and restrictions based on how people are born. But go back? No way. So there's no going back. There's no going back after death. As a whole community, we can't go back to the life that we had before white denial and white ignorance and part of white supremacy was suffocated along with George Floyd, if they hadn't already been, with the deaths of Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, James Byrd Jr., Emmett Till. We can't go back to a time when any argument that all had been made equal between the genders was crushed to death by legislation that says a uterus can be legislated against, but not a face with a mask. And we can't go back to the life we had here in Ames before the backlash against Black Lives Matter Week of Action in the schools, where we learned that it is not in any way okay for queer people in Ames. We can't go back. So maybe we can't go back to corporate church life as we knew it. I mean, this is the first day when anyone could come unregistered. Look around you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. How many, Barbara? So we're at 26. We used to be at 147. Don't let that panic you. Don't let that make you think we're doomed. We're not. We're not. But there's something that's changed after this much death. There's something changed in what we've lost. So because of that, later this week, the worship and music team, which includes Tom, who always is staffing our camera back there, Barbara Fadley, queen of the announcements, the Spanglers, Pat and Kim, where'd they go? They're in the back too, scattered around. Leah, Reeve Mendoza, Sonny, Pastor Hannah, me. We're going to, well, the original goal of the meeting was talk about how to balance this technology with this embodied worship. What's working, what isn't? Do we need to tweak what we're doing in any way? But we're going to take a step back before we start getting into the nitty-gritty of what do we do so that you, Laura Deal, I'm talking to you, so that you can hear the organ, because we want people on the Zooms to be able to hear the organ, and I know that's frustrating. But before we do that, we need to reflect on what is the purpose of worship. because all of our assumptions about what Sunday morning is died as well. What is the purpose of worship? Who does worship serve? Whom could worship yet serve? And we're not going to do that to develop a product. We're not going to do that to build a golden calf in a panic like the Hebrew slaves do when they can't find Moses one day. But we're going to do it to listen to what these 18 months of both mortal death and death of our traditions and our assumptions tells us about gathering in the name of God during a time of wilderness. And though we might murmur, we might grieve, does our practice of worship offer manna and water, not only for ourselves, but for our whole community? In all of this loss, which has been substantial, have we become a more free people? A freedom-loving people? A freedom-living people? Last week's spiritual practice was to reflect on how our rituals, the rituals in the life of our church, how might they give us the kind of generative power that the people who protected Moses had when they needed it most? How do the rituals of our life gathered around these stories, give us that generative strength? This week's spiritual practice for you, to reflect on your own, with other people, to weigh into your worship and music team, is to consider what losses here at church, what church losses, what deaths created by the virus and this virtual distance, what have they laid to rest? The Exodus story, this story of a people getting so free that though they may murmur, they never go back, it begins with violence against children. One of the reasons that our leadership teams, who have had more meetings than I can count to take care of this church, one of the reasons our leadership teams have been so careful about return to corporate worship has been out of concern for our little ones, for our teenagers. The feedback we've gotten from parents, grandparents, and guardians, people with littles in their house, is a thank you. Thank you for keeping corporate worship, embodied worship on hold, because that means there's one less thing we have to deny our kids. They've thanked us. So though we have known death, though we are still in many wildernesses all at once, though this is not rally day as it ought to be, though we don't know our future, in our protection and our care of the children who are ours to love, in our advocacy for all people who are vulnerable, not only to the virus, but to violence, we know that we are on a path that was prepared for us long ago, a path well trod, a path of faith in God's ways rather than in our own. Amen.